Hey, this is Lacey with SmartCast, and we're joined today with Dr. Chris Schaefer, the board-certified plastic surgeon, not the eye doctor, as I often have to explain to people. They get kind of confused sometimes. But thank you so much for being here with us today, Dr. Schaefer.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. And then we also have my mom here today. So today I want to talk to you a little bit about my mom's experience having some cosmetic procedures done with you, as well as like patient journey with what to expect coming in for a consultation with you. And then kind of too, just like the combination of having medical aesthetic skincare treatments in combination with surgical procedures too.
Okay.
So mom just recently had some things done that she was super excited about. She was very nervous. She's kind of put it off for a long time. And so I'm really glad that she finally bit the bullet and came and did the things that she's been wanting to do for a long time. So definitely. She looks fantastic, by the way. She sent me a swimsuit picture of herself the other day, and I thought she was the model in the magazine. And so like I had to look at it a couple of times and I went, oh my gosh, that's you. And she was like, yeah, you didn't know that? And I said, no, I didn't, but you look fantastic. Yeah. So she was excited. So mom, tell me a little bit about like what made you finally decide to go and get the consult?
Well, I first met Dr. Schaefer's wife. She was absolutely beautiful.
Precious.
And I told her, I said, well, I'll be coming in to visit soon. And I guess it was probably a couple months after that, I made my appointment. I was super scared. I walked in and they did my blood pressure, and Dr. Schaefer walked in and said, what is wrong with you? I said, it's you.
She's
it's this
like,
place.
I'm nervous.
And so
I have this effect on women. Usually it's nausea.
I made the mistake about pulling up YouTube and looking at, I had a tummy tuck, and I just, I don't know, the blood just makes me so
queasy.
Yes, it does. But I was fine. I mean, it was easy. I was shocked how easy it was. I thought it was going to be terrible, but it was probably one of the easiest surgeries I've ever done. I haven't done a ton, but definitely loved the results. I was shocked that the scar is so small,
mm-hmm.
and it's just perfect. I mean, I can see definitely, can I later do laser on it to help it lighten up?
Absolutely, yeah. As you all know, the laser treatments are great for the color issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they also can help with if the scar tends to be a little bit thicker and wider. And normally what we see is over the course of a year, as a scar matures, it's going to soften up and lighten up. But, you know, some people don't want to wait a year.
Yeah.
And some people don't get the maturation that we would expect or that they want. So these ancillary treatments are nice to reduce the width, reduce the visibility in terms of the color.
Mm-hmm.
We like the topical products too, particularly the topical silicone-based products.
Yes.
They tend to work the best. We encourage them not to use Mederma, which I say has become like the Band-Aid and the Kleenex of the scar cream industry, because I don't feel like the active ingredients are as good as what we can get with some of the more prescription-based and high-grade products.
I bought two bottles of the scar cream from you,
mm-hmm.
and I love it. I'm still using it.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things that I would say that I was probably terrified of is some of the tummy tucks that I've seen, their belly button looks weird.
Yeah.
It looks long. And you did an amazing job. It's perfect.
Yeah.
And
she was really excited about her belly button.
It has one little tiny little scar on the inside, mm-hmm. that kind of keloiding.
Right.
But that's easy with laser. And then mm-hmm. you have a great laser there that mm-hmm. I'm talking with you about coming in and hitting those areas. And the tummy tuck scar, it looks almost like a pencil. Just
right.
going across. It's
yeah,
not,
the pigment looks really good, too.
Yes, yeah. It's not thick at all.
I did a customized treatment plan on her after her surgery. Mm-hmm. So I did some ultrasound with exosomes, and the one that we have is a Pedin, so it's a plant-based exosome treatment. Mm-hmm. So I ultrasound that in, and then I did the Bohr effect on it to add oxygen to the area as well. And then we did some LED light on it, and I'm pretty sure we did some Cellutone as well.
Yes.
So we did that like once a week for 3 weeks.
Yes.
And that made a big difference too.
Yeah.
To help with the healing process. And then the Elastin post-surgical product you use topically as well.
Yes. Along with the scar cream.
Mm-hmm.
And,
sounds like I need to send all my tummy tuck patients to SmartSkin.
Yeah.
And then we need to send them to you because, I've been extremely pleased. Yeah. I mean, I'm not afraid to show anybody my scar because mm-hmm. I feel like it's so impressive that you can make such a difference in somebody. And I think my belly button looks better now than it did before.
Mm-hmm.
As you have children and age, it, you know, stretches out and everything. So definitely 100%. I give you a 10 out of 10.
That's so nice.
And then
he fixed my belly button too. I had a scar in my belly button I had a belly button piercing.
The dreaded belly button piercing scar. Oh my God.
So
the bane of my existence as a tummy tuck surgeon.
Done everything to try to address that scar on my belly button, and you just cut the scar tissue out and it looks so great now. And I even had gotten like a little stretch mark when I had one of my three pregnancies. But yeah, I'm not embarrassed of my belly button anymore. So that was really nice.
Yeah, I think the you know, the details of that procedure, you know, it's interesting. I'm actually reviewing a case from Iowa because I do some expert witness stuff and chart reviews. And it's about the last two cases that I've done have been about tummy tucks.
Oh, really?
And man, they can go south pretty quick in terms of just major, major problems. But really paying attention to not only the technical aspects of the closure to make the scar look nice, but also the location of it to make it low enough so that you can wear a bikini or undergarments and cover that scar up. And I think the belly button is the most important detail about the operation because, again, they can be made too large, they can constrict, they can be off-center. The shape of them can be abnormal or artificial. And what you really want when you're done with a tummy tuck, a facelift, a breast augmentation, in my view, as the provider of the services, is you want it to look, you know, not only beautiful but natural.
Mm-hmm.
And you want it to look like something that you would see in nature, something that's optimized aesthetically, but not artificial and overly done.
Correct.
I used to be at a practice where, believe it or not, the surgeon didn't make the cuts for the tummy for the belly button. And in my view, it's the most important part of the operation is shaping the belly button, positioning the belly button, and closing, putting the stitches in such a way that the scar heals well. It's very interesting when you're doing the procedure. When you pull that skin down and you're closing it, it is very, very tight. And if you make the cut the size that you want the belly button to be, what'll happen is the tissues will stretch when you make the cut and you remove the skin where the belly button is pulled through, and it'll become too large. Mm-hmm. And the cutout that you've made is the size that the belly button's going to be. So if you want it to be the right size, you actually have to make the cut very small because the tension and the stretch of the skin will enlarge the cut to what will be its eventual size. So that's very key. And I always impress that upon my staff during the case. We'll cut out the little section of skin where we want the belly button to be through. And I said, look at this piece of skin I've removed. Now look at the hole that's left where it used to be. And you cannot believe that they came from the same place.
Wow. Well, you did an amazing job. I know that the nurse that took care of me, she works for us part-time, and she knew I was so nervous about my belly button. And that was the first thing she said when she brought me back the next day is, you know, your belly button looks great.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I had old implants that during that time you went in and just popped those.
Mm-hmm.
Now, explain to the audience why you couldn't go ahead and do a lift then, why did you make me wait for 3 months?
So this is something that over the course of my career, by my own personal experience with patients, and then going to conferences and talking to other colleagues that I've appreciated, a lot of times women will get into a cycle where they'll get an augmentation early in life and then go through some changes throughout the course of their life over the next 10, 15 years, whether it be pregnancies, whether it be weight gain and loss, where their skin gets stretched and gravity is affecting things. Your tissues change significantly after pregnancy. The tissues become more compliant. Gravity affects things more when the tissues are more compliant, so you get a lot of skin stretch. You also get the mass effect of the implant compressing the tissue that's there, almost to the point where it feels like there's very little breast tissue there, and the breast is almost entirely implant. So they get into a cycle where they feel like their breasts are sagging a little bit lower, and the upper pole is not filled out, so they go in and get bigger implants. Mm-hmm. And you get bigger implants, the cycle repeats itself, you come in and get bigger implants. And so you reach a point where the tissues are really stretched and compressed, that if you go in and try to put a smaller implant in, because that's eventually what happens, the breasts become so heavy, they become almost disabling with back, shoulder, and neck pain, and the tissue is stretched so much that they now need a lift. And they don't want the weight, they want smaller implants, smaller breasts, but more lifted implants.
That was exactly what I wanted, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if you just go in and take out the old larger implants and put in smaller ones, it makes the operation much more difficult to do in one setting. Now, convenience would dictate that that's what you would do. So a part of my job in the consultation process is explaining to patients that, you know, ultimately what we want is the best outcome.
Exactly.
And the best outcome is going to be achieved by removing the mass effect, the compressive and stretching effect of those devices that are in there now, and giving the tissues a chance to recover. And we usually say 3 months. I tried to reduce it and go to a month, but what we found is that the recovery was still taking place. So if you give 3 months, a lot of times the compressed breast tissue will actually relax and expand and fill out the breast a little bit, and you'll get back some of the fullness that's been lost by the large implant. The skin will recover. It will recoil and stretch and naturally contract in a more uniform way. And when you go back in after the 3 months, you can take out the old shell if it's a saline implant. If it's a silicone implant, you will have removed it. You can't puncture a silicone implant through the skin like you can a saline. And then you put the new device in. The other thing is the scar tissue envelope, the capsule, has also contracted. So now you can more actively fit the implant to the new space. You don't have this big space that you're filling with a smaller implant, because that requires you to reduce the space surgically. Much more difficult thing to do. If you have a 3 month interval where the implant's no longer there, or it's deflated, the capsule contracts, the tissue contracts, the breast tissue expands. And the other advantage you have is you now have a normal baseline where you can size for the new implants and get a more accurate sizing process for the new devices. So I just think it optimizes the outcome eventually. Now, the patient has to be willing to have a deflated chest for 3 months. But, you know, I think the anxiety of that really resolves after a few days or a week or so, when they start seeing the changes that are occurring with the compressive large device being gone.
So what was that process like for you, Mom? Because that's the way that you guys did it.
Exactly. I would say easier than I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
I think, too, when you look at something long-term, that this, you know, your new implants, your new lift, it's going to look so much better. It's going to be healthier for me, because I was having neck issues and back issues. It was worth the wait. So
what did you feel like your skin tissue felt like from day one to day, like
Definitely
three
different.
Months later.
Yeah. When we first did it, I felt like they were like slinkies. And that's what I called them. Mm-hmm. And I thought, there is no way. I remember seeing you like the next week and you said, do they look any better? I'm like, nothing to brag about. But but definitely worth the wait. And so I would say, do what your doctor, do what your surgeon tells you to do. Do the right thing. Wait it out. Be patient. It's going to turn out exactly what you hope for. And also, no matter where you are, I mean, I would highly recommend Dr. Schaefer and their staff. Their building is beautiful. Their facility is beautiful.
Yeah, it's so nice, too, that one of the reasons why I selected you as a surgeon, not only because I'd seen some other work that you had done that I've been really satisfied with, but also the location of your office is really convenient. It's easy. So easy to get in and out of. It's not inside of a hospital where you have to pay for parking. You just park, you walk inside, go down the elevator, and you're there. But also having the operating room inside your office was really nice and convenient too. Mm-hmm. Anytime I can avoid being in a hospital, definitely better. So y'all's office is beautiful, convenient. I love that you have an in-office operating room. Your anesthesiologist team is top-notch. Mm-hmm. We feel like celebrities with them, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's been nice. I think it provides more special care. Mm-hmm.
It does. It's more of a VIP kind of feeling.
Really is, because you go into the room, you've got a robe on, the anesthesiologist comes in, you open the door and you walk into the operating room. And I remember thinking, how did I get asleep? Because it was like, I don't even remember walking across the hall, and they were like, oh, you're gone as soon as you hit the bed. So I didn't have any discomfort. I woke up easy, I felt like. Mm-hmm. And then I just stayed in the hotel that's right next to your place. Mm-hmm. And, You really want to get in bed quickly and just go to sleep, and then you have to wake up so early to come back the next day, and then you go home and you recover. Mm-hmm. But definitely have been satisfied with, 100% satisfied with everything I've had done. I just recently had the implants put in, the lift and everything. That was much easier than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm.
Much happier with a smaller implant.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, especially, I just turned 60. I was 59 when we did the first surgery, and then I just turned 60. And I can't tell you what a relief it is with my neck. My neck already feels better. Mm-hmm. Even whenever we popped the implants, it was almost instant.
Right.
You know, and then I had gone through, I'd gained a pretty good bit of weight. I'd say a good 30 pounds. My husband went through a health scare for about a year and a half, and menopause and everything else, and weight that I never thought in a million years that I would gain, mm-hmm. like in my arms and my back and my stomach. Those are areas that I never thought I would gain in. You gain because mm-hmm. Your body's going through a change. And then you have the big implants on top of that. And I felt like they weren't huge at first when I was smaller, but as I got older, they became almost, they make you look even
frumpier.
Frumpy, yeah, mm-hmm. big.
Right.
And speaking of a natural look, I'm so glad that the trend now is women getting smaller implants versus the big ones that everybody was doing for so long.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just healthier. They're going to be a lot happier in the long run. I know for me personally, I wanted to go with something much smaller and more natural, so that as I got older, I didn't feel like it made me feel heavier or frumpier or anything like that.
Yeah, I think, what I've found is there's always going to be a range of desire or, mm-hmm. or the ideal out there.
Yeah.
So we still have some crazy requests. there was a time when I early on in my career where I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to put these in because it's malpractice. What you find as a businessman is if they're going to go somewhere else. So
right.
I think I've kind of modified my approach to basically explaining to patients, the trade-offs of bigger implants and what you can expect down the road. And I try to advise them
full
the way that I think it should be, but ultimately it's their decision. And I think as long as they're making an informed decision, then I'm willing to do the surgery. And I'm not going to be sitting there 5 years later saying, I told you so.
Right.
But they need to know that there are trade-offs with kind of, with respect to breast augmentation, really large implants or not doing a lift when it's indicated. I've taken the approach with implant size where we were talking about this yesterday with a patient where, you know, you have some doctors that decide what implants you're going to get, which I just think is a horrible way to go about it. I also think it's not, I've been in practices where I've been an employee and the owner has basically said, no, they have to decide. It's their choice because you don't want to be held accountable if they don't like the result. Well, my view is you shouldn't be in this business if you're going to push all the choices to the patient. You're there to guide them. Mm-hmm. So when we do a consultation and we're talking about implant size, we give them an idea about what size of implant will increase them, a certain amount of cup sizes, cc's to cup size sort of conversion. We have them do some sizing. I give them my thoughts and I try to guide them, but ultimately I let them make the final decision. But we try to keep it within a range that's appropriate to meet their wishes, to address their anatomy, and to not be on the in these fringe areas of especially too big.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's worked well for us.
Yeah. I felt like that whole process was very natural and comfortable. Yeah. I basically just said, I don't want to be too big. This is kind of where I would like to be. And then you were able to kind of look at my shoulder frame and tell me what would suit my body type. Yeah. And then I was able to try on like a little bra with different cup sizes to see what it would be like. Mm-hmm. So the whole process, as far as that goes, I felt like was very comfortable and made sense. And I was very happy with the outcome. For sure.
So I have a question as far as like, what would you say is the number one surgery, cosmetic surgery you do
in your practice?
Yeah.
Well, I would say it seems to change, and it's not a seasonal change. It's not a monthly change that we see, but it's almost like things go in streaks. I do a lot of breast surgery, so I would say, you know, between augmentations, reductions, and lifts, that's probably what we do on the regular. And then behind that would be contouring with liposuction. We do a fair amount of liposuction, mm-hmm. which is typical for someone in kind of my stage of the career, kind of in the middle of the career. That's typically what you see. And then as plastic surgeons get in the later part of their career, they tend to evolve more into the facial area. And I think part of that is if you do good work, your patients kind of age with you and, mm-hmm. and you know, people are coming in their 50s and 60s to get the facial surgery. My partner, he's 10 years older than me. He does a little bit more facial work in terms of the breakdown of his practice. He's kind of marketed mm-hmm. towards that. We don't market it to any specific thing other than just cosmetic surgery. I actually enjoy doing the different types of operations, whether it be rhinoplasty, facelifts, eyelid surgery. And, you know, I enjoy breast surgery. We do some, you know, female rejuvenation surgery as well. You know, we do all of the contouring procedures that are related to bariatric or weight loss procedures. So the thigh lifts, the arm lifts, lower body lifts, upper body lifts. I enjoy doing a variety of things. I think it keeps things different, you know, fresh. Mm-hmm. And I like the challenge of mastering different types of procedures. I think if you just do, a lot of people told me, you need to be known as the breast guy or the face guy or the, you know,
the tummy tuck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just think, and it kind of pigeonholes you into one area.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy, it also throws a bigger net. We, for a while there, we were the Brazilian butt lift practice. You know, and I enjoy doing those cases as well.
How dangerous are those?
You know, if done improperly, if done with, you know, not knowing the anatomy, not mm-hmm. being aware of the risks, it can be, you know, any surgery can be dangerous.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They've gotten bad publicity because of the volume of cases that have been done kind of in the Florida area.
Mm-hmm.
And not only the volume of cases, but the volume of fat. For your audience, if you don't know, Brazilian butt lift is liposuctioning fat and then repurposing it by injecting it into the buttocks to shape the buttocks, make them more full, projecting round, etc.
Mm-hmm.
That fat, if placed too deep into the tissues, can get access into the bloodstream and cause, you know, fatalities.
Mm-hmm.
Serious complications, even death, and so if done improperly, it can be very dangerous. So, you know, part of being a board certified plastic surgeon and attending, you know, our national meetings on a regular basis, which we're required to do to retain our certification and retain our continuing medical education credits to be on privileges in hospitals locally, is it that we get instruction about these things and trends nationally, and you're given guidance about how to do these things appropriately and adjust your techniques as the procedures evolve.
Yeah,
and that was something that came to light 7 or 8 years ago about this segment of the nation where they were having a high fatality rate with those, and they were able to modify the techniques and give guidelines about what should and shouldn't be done. So, you know, knock on wood, we've never had an issue with any of the patients that we've done that procedure on. And part of that comes from being safe, you know, being aware, knowing the anatomy.
Being educated.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite procedure that you do and a least favorite?
Well, I think the favorite operation that I have, and I've said this for a while now, is rhinoplasty, which is a nose job, commonly known as a nose job. I just, the detail and the expertise that are involved in rhinoplasty are, I find, very fascinating. And I also think it's a less is more procedure. Again, going back to a natural look, you know, a beautiful nose, you can create a beautiful nose, but a lot of people are born with beautiful noses.
My mom.
I've actually been told by surgeons that I have the perfect nose,
yeah.
And that would probably be the only thing on my body that's perfect.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I agree, but I would also say that your daughter has a beautiful nose. I think I've told you that before, haven't I?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, I think your nose is, you know, the tip is like the ideal that I would try to create.
Yeah. Well, I need a revision because I had a deviated septum surgery years ago, and now the cartilage in between is like crooked.
Yeah.
And so I actually breathe worse now than I did beforehand.
Yeah. Now, see, that's the other thing with rhinoplasty. It's interesting. I used to do septums, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Plastic surgeons are trained to do septums, but not trained to do septums as well as ENT doctors. Okay, and I did some septums early on in my career, and what I found was I wasn't delivering the result that the patients needed, that they were not breathing better. They were breathing the same or even worse when I did their septums. So what I ended up doing is I now do, when someone has a breathing issue and a cosmetic issue, I coordinate those procedures with an ENT colleague in town, and we will do a tandem case together. We're doing one in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And we do about 4 or 5 a year that way. And
wow.
I think it serves the patients better.
Yeah.
Now, I always explain to them, I said, getting two doctors to schedule together is like having the stars in alignment. You know,
yeah.
it's so you have to have a little bit of flexibility with our schedules. And
do you do that in your office or in a hospital somewhere?
I don't. I do it downtown at a surgery center because I go where Dr. Davis is.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I take time out of my schedule. I do it on a clinic day because that's when he operates. And so, you know, it'll cost me a half a day's worth of time, but I think it's worth it for the patients. They get two operations in one setting, one recovery, and then we can maximize the outcome for them in terms of the function, the breathing issues, which Dr. Davis, he does he is much, much better at diagnosing the issue. He has all the diagnostic equipment, and he has all the specialized equipment in the operating room to execute the procedure the way it needs to be done. He can address issues not only with septums, but sinuses and turbinates and other things that affect the breathing that I've never been trained to do. And then I can focus on the cosmetic aspects, and he doesn't like doing the cosmetic part of it. He doesn't feel like that's his wheelhouse.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the patients are really well served. Now, not all the rhinoplasties I do are with Dr. Davis, because some people don't have any breathing issues. So, you know, I really enjoy doing that procedure. And the other thing is it's challenging, and because it's right there, there's no clothing that's going to cover up your nose. So, you know, you got to do a good job.
Yeah. Do you shy away from revisions? I know a lot of plastic surgeons don't like to do a revision once the nose has been operated on once. They don't really like to go behind someone else.
Well, I don't shy away from seeing any patient, but if I feel I can't serve the patient, then I probably won't do it, whether it's a rhinoplasty, breast surgery, or anything. But the reality of the situation is, the longer you're in practice, the more revisions you see.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And, what you hope is that your colleagues in the area aren't seeing revisions that you've done the original surgery on.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah, we all talk when we get together. It's like, have you seen any of my patients? You know, but I do see quite a number of patients for revision surgery. And we do quite a number of them.
Yeah. And are there any surgeries that you don't like to do?
Well, there are the operations that are more labor intensive and that have me, you know, one of the things you have to worry about over the years being a surgeon is, you know, orthopedic issues with your neck and shoulders and this sorts of things, because of the way you have to stand and the different sort of positions that you have to get into to do some of these things. We do an operation called a medial thigh lift. It lifts the inner thigh for people typically that have lost a lot of weight. That is a labor intensive procedure, and it's awkward positioning to do the closure. So that's an operation that I don't particularly enjoy doing. Ironically, we've done it, like I said, it comes in streaks. We've done it a couple of them recently. I wouldn't want to be known as the medial thigh guy.
Well, the good news is that we have the M-Sculpt Neo that actually has an applicator to treat the inner thighs that will help with skin laxity and muscle stimulation as well. So you can always send them to us to try that first.
We'll make a point of that.
Yeah. So now that medical aesthetic procedures have been on the rise, I'm sure that you see patients more frequently now that are in a habit of taking care of their skin, doing facial services, medical aesthetic services, and body treatments. How has that improved your outcomes with your patients with their surgeries?
Well, over the years, you know, I learned long ago, you know, y'all can't see me, but I'm very light-skinned, blue-eyed, you know, Fitzpatrick II sort of complexion. And my grandfather died from melanoma. So I learned at an early age the importance of, sun avoidance, UV, you know, the damage of UV radiation. And I've been a proponent throughout my career of practicing regular sun avoidance. I have three kids. Two of them have my same complexion. And, we slathered sunblock on them, and we talked about barrier blocks and how important they are versus chemical blocks. So I've always been a proponent of skin care and prevention and protecting your skin. And of course, skin treatments and healthy skin are going to result in much better outcomes when you do the surgical procedures. There's just certain things that surgery can't fix. Right. You know, they can't fix acanthotic skin. They can't fix melasma. They can't fix overly vascular skin or rosacea.
Right.
And these are all related to how we treat our skin and how we care for our skin and whether or not we're avoiding the sun or exposing ourselves to environmental things that can create issues with our skin. And it's the same thing after surgery. You've made this, you know, tremendous investment, multiple thousands of dollars in a surgical procedure to improve your appearance. It only makes sense that you're going to protect that investment, just like you would do maintenance on your home or your car or your boat. You're going to spend all this money to buy this wonderful car, and you're not going to maintain it by changing the oil and getting it serviced regularly. So, you know, that's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned.
So a facelift is, once you do a facelift, when would you do another one? Or well, would you have to do another one?
You know, I think it depends. I think it depends on what time in life you are to have it done. And, you know, what is your health? Those sorts of things. Your genetics, like you said, Lacey, impact that as well. You know, I always said that the wheelhouse, the kind of the time frame when you have the facelift done, in my opinion, optimally is 55 to 65. And the reason is you've probably aged to the point where you're going to see a tremendous benefit from it. And you're also young enough and have enough life in front of you that you're going to enjoy the benefit of it, okay? Mm-hmm. And the physical hit that you take, recovering from it, you're going to be more of an age to recover from it quickly and not feel like it was such a horrible recovery. So that, to me, is kind of the optimum time. Doesn't mean that you can't have it before 55 or after 65, but I just think that's just a nice area of your life to have it done. I've done facelifts on people in their 80s. Mm-hmm. I've done facelifts on people in their 30s. Okay. But those are the fringes. Yeah. And you know, my goal would be to do a facelift one time for a person. And get them, like, if you think 55, it lasts 15 years, 10 to 15 years. Now they're 65, 70. And they're probably at a point in their life where they're like, you know, my appearance is not as important to me as it was 15 years ago when I had my facelift, and you know, I'm fine with where I am. But what I've learned is that those feelings about your appearance really never go away.
No, right. They don't.
They don't.
Yeah, and people in their 70s and 80s still want to look nice. Mm-hmm. I did a breast augmentation on a woman 2 weeks ago, 86 years old.
Wow. As long as they're healthy,
right,
they're able to do that. I mean, we have clients that come in that...
in their 80s and 90s, yeah.
That have been with me since I started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're beautiful.
Yeah.
And they love looking pretty.
They do.
My view on it is if your health is in such a state that you can tolerate it, if you have the means and if you have the desire to want to do this, why not? Why not do it? As long as it's safe, as long as it's reasonable and your expectations are sensible enough about it, I see no reason not to do it. Yeah. You go through this same thought process when you're contemplating a vacation or buying a new vacation home or a new car, you know? Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Yeah.
It's an investment. I feel like, too, and maybe just as the techniques have advanced over the years, but I feel like the healing process is just not nearly as big of a deal as it used to be. Like, people are healing so much faster now.
Yeah, I mean, I think nutrition affects that. I think medical advances affect that. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, people are more educated.
They're taking about better care of their skin in general. So
yeah, and I think the surgical techniques have evolved as well. You know,
it's not as long of downtime as it used to be. Like, now it's just not a big deal anymore.
Yeah, and I think sometimes what we put limitations on them. We've altered the way that we've done our dressings. You know, I remember when I used to do breast augmentations in the early part of my career, I would wrap people in a 6-inch ACE wrap, and we would take it off the next day, and they would just like heave this sigh of relief, like, oh my God, it feels so much better. Well, now we don't do that,
right?
And so they don't have this 24 hours of feeling bound up.
Yes.
And the same thing with facial surgery. You know, we don't wrap them up as much as we used to. We don't, you know, we alter our technique so there's not as much swelling and bruising, and all of that impacts not only the eventual outcome, but it also impacts, you know, the process of recovery.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I had my tummy tuck, I was dreading what I thought I was coming in to get stitches out. And you just took the tape and pulled it off. And I was like, that's it? It was just tape? And so I guess the stitches were inside. Is that why it looks so smooth? There's, like, when I say a pencil mark, it almost looks like just a little pencil mark. It's not wide. I've seen some that were super
huge,
wide.
Like train tracks.
I know. Yeah. And I was really nervous about that.
Well, people come to plastic surgeons for beautiful outcomes. Mm-hmm. And so the scar is part of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I explain to patients all the time, they want to know how the scars will disappear, and I have to tell them, well, they don't. Mm-hmm. We try to make them virtually disappear, and right. we do that by positioning them in very strategic areas so that they blend into natural borders in our bodies, the breast crease, around the ears, low on the abdomen that can be covered with bikini bottoms or undergarments. And then closing, we do a layered closure of dissolving stitches, multiple layers that take the tension off the most external layer. That typically will result in thinner scars. External stitches that cross perpendicular over the incision, staples or nylon stitches that have to be removed, leave suture tracks. And who wants to come to a plastic surgeon and have a railroad track scar?
And I've seen those.
Yeah. And so why do it that way? Well, you do it that way because it's quicker and more convenient, and you can get on to the next case. That's not what a plastic surgeon is supposed to do. Yeah. That's not why patients come to plastic surgeons. They come for
a great
outcomes and attention to detail, mm-hmm. and techniques and skill sets that allow for nicer scars.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have a question about facelifts and facial surgeries. Now that dermal fillers and PDO threads and things like that are on the rise, what does that look like to you as a surgeon when you're doing a facelift on someone, or you're, you know, doing some sort of facial plastic surgery? Is it hindering your outcomes at all? Does it, like, is there any effect at all with that?
Well, I think some of that effect is hard to measure because I don't know. It's hard for me to gauge how many patients aren't coming to me because of these other options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do filler. We right. do a good amount of filler. And I think I have the unique perspective on filler to say, well, it will accomplish this, but it mm-hmm. won't accomplish that vis-a-vis a facelift. Mm-hmm. There's an expression in medicine, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Mm-hmm.
And that means when you have one option in your toolbox to offer patients, well, you're going to promote that, and you're going to talk it up and trump it up like it's better than this or superior to that, or it's in replace of a surgical procedure. If you don't do the surgical procedure, how can you really say that?
Right.
So, you know, we hear about this thing called a liquid facelift.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the right hands, people can achieve very nice results with, you know, multiple syringes of filler. I don't think you ever are going to accomplish what you can with a facelift if it's indicated.
Right.
I think for the young patient who doesn't really need a facelift, you know, volume is great. There are certain things that a facelift can't accomplish that you need volume. I like using fat when we're doing a surgical procedure, mm-hmm. but I'll use filler as a volume replacement in the tear troughs, in the cheeks, lips, nasolabial folds, everywhere that everybody else uses it that doesn't have the ability to offer a facelift. I've done the threads in the past. My experience was with the threads is that they didn't last,
mm-hmm.
and that they caused issues. I know that they've made modifications, and there's new generations of threads right. now that may or may not have those problems. But having done that in the past and having issues with it that I've had to go back and fix, and it's just one of those things where I don't really want to go there. So I don't. It's hard for me to say how it's impacted my practice. I do know that. I still am of the opinion when a facelift is indicated, it's by far the best option for patients to get a long-term outcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also in regards to just the facelift procedure itself, if they've had dermal filler or PDO threads or anything like that, does it make it more complicated for you to do the facelift, or does it have any impact at all?
Threads, I haven't seen a lot of. I haven't seen a lot of threads in the tissues on faces that I've worked on. I do know that, you know, sometimes we'll come across small little granulomas or collections of filler, whatever it may be, radius, the hyaluronic acids and whatnot. One thing that I have seen, interestingly, is cool sculpting, residual cool sculpting, like, say, in the neck, mm-hmm. and we come across that, and that tissue is more scarred, mm-hmm. And it looks more like it's been, you know, surgically treated in the past, like we would see with previous operations. Mm-hmm. So those things are important to know. It kind of helps you plan surgical operation and technical things and be prepared for maybe a little bit more time and a little bit more issues that you may run into during the surgery.
Have you seen that as well for, like, tummy tucks for someone who's done
Absolutely.
Cool sculpting?
Yeah. Previous liposuction, other non-surgical treatments for fat removal. Absolutely, you see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you added a little fat up underneath my eyes. Mm-hmm. Now, will that last? How long will that last?
Well, hopefully it lasts forever. I mean, it's your tissue, you okay. know, but I've gotten away from promising that, of course, because, you know, another saying that I like to use is I never say always or never in medicine, because when you do, it's literally the next patient you say that to will make you a liar. So you have to be careful about over-promising. Over-promise, you want to under-promise, over-deliver versus the reciprocal of that.
Yeah.
We've had great retention with fat around the eyes. We've had less luck or retention results in the lips. I think it's all about how active the muscle is and that sort of thing. But fat has been a great vehicle for us to use to shape and provide volume, which is very typical of aging. You lose volume in your face, you know, a nice full volume, full cheeks, full temples is a sign of youth. You see women who lose weight or maybe go through an extended illness and they get these hollowing of around their eyes.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about, I'm seeing a lot of, lip lifts where they go in and mm-hmm. cut around here. Yeah. Do you do a lot of those?
I've done more and more of them, and I've actually got to where I'm recommending them. Mm-hmm. That was one where you're just thinking, is the scar worth the benefit? But the closer you work around the nose, you realize how nice the scars are around there. And I think it's because of the amount of sebaceous units that are in that area of the face. But this, mm-hmm. we say that scars never disappear. I've actually seen some disappear on the nose.
Yeah.
But I have done some lip lifts recently. I had a very young woman come in and ask me for one. I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know that it's a great idea. We did it, and she loved it. Mm-hmm. And it looked really good. So I've got, you know, an aging lip in a woman, you'll have, it will lengthen.
Yeah.
The lip starts to droop, you lose the pink vermilion. Mm-hmm. And so that the length, I mean, you look at Lacey, you look at you, there's a difference in the length there.
And I should have done that while I was under her. No, you should have.
but a short distance is a sign of youth. Yeah. And you see that as women age, they get that longer and longer white upper lip. And so a very strategic placement of an incision that's right underneath the nose will elevate the lip. The scar is very hard to see, and it's one of those kind of detail things that I think really adds to the outcome.
Will it change the nose at all?
No.
It doesn't?
I've never seen it, okay. As long as you put the scar in the right place.
And that procedure, how long does that normally take?
Oh, that's 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Half an hour, because... You know, you essentially, you can do it under local if you're just doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was my next question.
Yeah, it can be done under local.
Yeah, because I was, you know, I'm going to do a local and do the Cyton mm-hmm. Coming up soon. Mm-hmm. And
is that something that could be done at the same time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Bingo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited definitely appreciate everything you and your staff have done for me and Lacey and several other of our girls that work for us. We will definitely highly recommend you. We're so fortunate to have such a circle of experts around us. Dermatologists and everything else. You know, I'm always sending people to my eye doctor because he's amazing. So it's nice to know the work that certain people do so that we're able to confidently, you know, send people to them.
And I think the biggest takeaway too is that so many people put off just going and getting the consultation because they're nervous or they're scared or whatever. And just go for it. Go and find out what your options are, because you just don't know what you don't know. And if you don't go and ask, you'll just put it off and regret it, because you could be enjoying your new beautiful body or face.
I was scared. I was in there sweating and, you know, my blood pressure was up, but I did it afraid, you know. I just said,
I went with you.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I've gone with most everybody. I've been everybody's hand holder.
Well, I think that, you know, number one, we don't charge for consultations because we like to cast a wide net. We've gone back and forth with that.
And you'd be surprised how much, because people will tell us things that they wouldn't necessarily tell you, and they really appreciate that you don't charge for that. There have been some staff or clients that have not gone to certain doctors because they do charge a consultation fee, and so they definitely appreciate that. I mean,
you know, there's trade-offs. You know, you get tire kickers, you get people that just come in and want information, they have no intention, but you know, I think it just allows you to see more people, and you know, I think maybe they don't sign up for surgery, but maybe they get interested in some of the other things that you offer.
Or maybe they don't do it that day, but when they are ready, they remember that and they come back to you.
I mean, you gotta get in front of people. You gotta let them know that you're out there. So that's one of the things that we do. And as far as what you said about other people, you know, around and the excellent quality of people here, I think some of the work that's done here in Birmingham is equal or better than what you see anywhere in the country.
100%. I agree. Sweet home Alabama.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to believe, but I mean, we have some of the best dermatologists, plastic surgeons.
And there's really no division anymore. I feel like a long time ago there tried to be this big division between plastics and derms and med spas and all of that, and now we all work together beautifully. Like we refer business to our derm friends, we refer business to you guys, and like we want to make sure that our patients are being taken care of, and we know exactly where all we can send them to make sure that they are getting the best care possible.
Well, if medicine, if nothing else, is a humbling profession. You're only as good as your last patient or your last complication. And, you know, I always tell people, if you go to a doctor and they tell you they don't have issues or problems with patients, they're either lying or they haven't done enough.
Exactly.
Work. I mean, it's going to happen. And by the same token, you can't know everything.
Right.
You know, I mean, you have to be humble enough to realize that there's other people out there that know, you know, they're experts and they have their areas of specialty and expertise.
Right. And if there is a problem, making sure that you take accountability for it and correcting it.
Yeah.
That makes a big difference,
too. I agree.
So, do you have anything else you would like to add, Mom?
No. I think we have covered it all.
Dr. Schaefer, anything else you want to add?
No, but I greatly enjoyed the conversation today, and thank you so much for the invitation.
I will definitely be coming in for my lip flip along with my...
Your lip lift.
Is it called a lip flip or a lip?
The lip flip is with the Botox.
Yeah. Okay.
The lip lift is the surgical.
Okay. I want the surgical.
Yes.
I want it permanent.
The lip flip only lasts about 6 weeks.
Let's don't do that.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. We really appreciate you being here, and we had a lot of fun talking to you about the different surgical procedures and kind of the backstory of all of those things. And Mom, I loved hearing your experience. I'm so glad you finally bit the bullet and went and did it. I can definitely see a big improvement in your overall confidence. I mean, it's just been amazing to me just seeing you finally being excited about getting pictures made. And you would never get pictures before, and now you do. And so it makes a big difference in someone's self-confidence to finally, you know, do something for themselves and feel better about themselves. So I appreciate you for that.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I appreciate the partnership and collaboration that we have. It's very rewarding.
Yes.
And in your kind words, and you're willing to talk about your experiences.
Oh, I shouts it from the rooftop. Yeah. I do. I mean, one of the dermatologists was in the other day, and I was like, look at my scar. She was like, oh, my gosh, that looks great.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm showing off my scars.
Yeah.
But I'm
proud of those scars.
Well, I'm expecting those to look – they look so good now, so I'm expecting them to even look better.
Yeah. Mine are almost totally gone now.
Yeah. Yours are.
Yeah.
I mean –
they look great.
Yeah, they do.
So. All right. Well, thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your Friday.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time on SmartCast.